Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an Asian, see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. And you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I've signed and I've stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see 100,000,
600,000 deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for two straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming. Sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes. I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking, They messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it's on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No. Nope.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's three daughters, six-year-old twins, Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister, Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people. Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the stuff that comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste. Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33
years?
Yeah. You don't look 33 years old, but you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
Yes, this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space.
Mm.
One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room.
Mm.
You play in this room.
Mm.
You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here. The five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here. My another sister over here and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, tell us ki mother work aayegi, maja family illa he karega.
Means he has a problem at that he cannot manage the his salary enough for four people. Yeah.
This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
Was it arranged marriage?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home, and in this video I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So, let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off this space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost.
Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this,
which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I have done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway. And this four-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals. And the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst the smaller fridge allows room on top and down the side to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated because I had the worked up and splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300. And if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a three-bed house to a seven-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization. And with that first video payslip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish. And I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works. And it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees, so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like. You can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I help keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house evaluated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here or here to see that video, because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
In 1986, when the Chernobyl disaster sent radioactive clouds all over Europe, we knew we had to do something against nuclear energy. Many parents were really concerned about their children, and so some of us formed a group named Parents for a Nuclear Free Future. We began to educate ourselves in how to save energy. We started in our own home, and then we tried to motivate others to do the same. We wanted the energy company to support us, but they told us no, because we want to sell energy and not to save energy. And so one day we had the idea to take over the grid.
Citizens could generate their own power from solar, hydro, and wind.
Small producers are paid when they feed their electricity into the grid. Consumers are rewarded when they save energy.
So then there was only one question. How do we get the power grid? When the election came up to decide who controls the grid, we knew it was now or never.
EWS, the Shunau Electrical Power Company, held two citizen referendums and won them both.
The power company said, well, you have the votes, but we have the grid. And we want 9 million Dutch mark, and either you pay it or we don't give you the grid. So we had a campaign asking people to help us raising this money.
It took EWS 7 long years to purchase the electrical grid.
This power company was afraid that this was the beginning of a movement, and it was.
Under Ursula's plan, homeowners have small power plants called cogenerators. EWS is now collectively owned by more than 1,000 citizens.
A year after we had taken the grid, the German electricity market was deregulated. Every person could buy electricity from the company he had chosen. And that is the idea of renewable power, because it's decentralized.
This is grassroots at its best. More than 100,000 people now have the electric current from this very small city, and they are very proud of it.
We want to have 100% renewable energy in 2050. All studies say it is possible to do that, and so we will do it.
For outstanding environmental achievement in Europe, the 2011 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Ursula Sladek, Schunau, Germany.
Well, you're about to discover, maybe for the first time in your life, that wealth is not money, and money's not wealth. Real estate's not wealth either. Neither is gold or silver. What is wealth? I believe that wealth is one thing. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. That's what wealth is. Wealth is the value that you create for someone other than you. And so the more we develop our ability to create value for other people, the more wealthy we are. And the reason I say money's not wealth, think about it like this. If you were stuck on a desert island and you had hundreds of millions of dollars in cash, what would it be worth? Nothing. Right? If you're stranded there, nobody knows you're there, nobody can find you, all that money doesn't do you any good. If you're there with another person, and they have food, and you have water, and they have no water, and you have no food, then your water becomes your wealth because you can trade them some of your water for some of your food. Are y'all tracking? And so everything that we desire, we get by giving somebody else something they desire. The more value we create for other people, the more wealth we have. It's just that simple. Now, money is one of the stores of value. That's what money is. Money is a store of value, and it's also a way to transfer value. It's also a way to represent value that you've already created, right? So if you think about money as like a certification, right? Like it's a certificate that proves that you've created value for someone other than yourself. Right? And so, like, if you go to Eddie V's, and you're a nice person, right, and you say, well, I would like for y'all to serve me some food, they are going to say, okay, we'll serve you some food, but at the end, they expect you to produce proof that you serve somebody other than you, and that proof shows up in the way of money, right? Because that's all money does. Money shows people that you deserve to have somebody create value for you because you can prove you created value for someone else, right? And here's what's really cool. All of us are good at different things. So we all have different value that we can create for other people. And if we keep the value that we create to ourselves, it doesn't really do us that much good. But if we spread the value, the value that we create for other people, if we spread that around, then it becomes more valuable. Now here's what's really interesting. I can't create value for someone until I know what's valuable to that someone. So wealth creation has like a lot to do with discovery, like discovering what other people value. And if I'm going to know what other people value, then I got to know where do those values come from? Like, where do values come from? There are things you value that I don't value. There are things I value that you don't value, right? And there's things that we both value, but you might value more than me or I might value more than you. Huh. So where do our values come from? Okay, I believe the first place that values come from is past, perceived, I'm just going to do PERC, perceived voids create present pursued values. Are y'all tracking? Past perceived voids create present pursued values. What does that mean? That means if I feel like something was missing in the past, I will work in the present to fill the void that I had in the past, right? So that's why if people grow up in a place where they're in like dire hunger conditions or feast or famine, they value food like at a very high level, right? That's why people who, so for me, like, I like cars. I like them. I like cars. I grew up working on cars, right? But I grew up in a family where when I was growing up, my parents never bought a new car ever. They had seven boys. Here's what.
Okay, today, leading off from yesterday, or following up from yesterday, the podcast live stream is titled $6.85 per day. $6.85 per day. What do I mean by $6.85 per day? Today we're going to take a look at the global landscape of the cost of living globally and see where it fits in your neck of the woods or your particular lifestyle, and then what we're doing as well. $6.85. Now, let's go to some numbers here. I have this on my Blog Talk notes here on Blog Talk Radio in the program notes. And later on, I'll post them on our Facebook page. But anyway, here we go. These numbers are coming from the World Bank. $30 a day. Now, before we get to the $6.85 a day, well, actually, let's start there because I did tell this podcast $6.85 per day. So we'll start there. 47% of the planet, because we got 8 billion people on this planet and counting, 47% of the planet, almost 50% of the planet, lives on $6.85 per day or less. That's 47% of the planet. Now, that totals up to the 365 days a year. Matter of fact, I'm gonna double check. Or $6.85 a day. Oops, made a mistake. $6.85 a day times 365 days in a year. So 47% of the planet, they live off of $2,525 for the entire year. That's 47% of the planet. All right. Another figure. These are World Bank figures, not my figures. A dollar. Matter of fact, $1.25. You got a percentage of the planet that they live off of 25%. $1.25 per day. So you got over a billion people that live. This is for the whole year, on less than $500 for the whole year. All right. Now, let's go to $30 a day. Those who you are listening, particularly if you're in a Western country, United States, Canada, EU, European Union, we're on Euro, but we're using dollars today. 84% of the people on planet Earth on this day of March 7th, 2024, 84% of the planet, well over half of the planet, lives on $30 a day or less. So if we take $30 and multiply by every day in the year, 365 days, 84% of the people on planet Earth right now live on $10,950 per year or less. So if you're earning, this just rounded up to $11,000 a year, you're doing better than way over half of the people on planet Earth right now. But at the 50%, at $6.85, well, I'm going to replay this from Oprah, because the person in this, the audio I'm about to play that from Oprah, they're doing better than half the planet. Let's take a look at how much this guy, he's got a family of five, including himself. How much does he earn to support that five? And they're happy. Just listen to the voice of the wife and the kids. Oh, let me, oh, here I'll find it. It's not a long audio.
As the sun rises over the Arabian Sea on the coastal city of Mumbai, the day is beginning for the 10 million people who live in the crowded city slums. The Hegre family lives in the Kalava slum, in this tiny 10 by 10 foot concrete room. The 60 neighbors who live on their small lane all share just four toilets and this small room for bathing. The Hegre's three daughters, six-year-old twins Anisha and Tanisha, and 12-year-old big sister Anchal, are up early getting ready for school. Their mother, Parvati, helps get the girls and her husband, Rajesh, out the door. After their dad drops the girls off at school, he heads to his job at a security company where he earns about $200 a month. Then Parvati cleans their house, makes lunch and dinner, and performs her daily prayers. Then the most important task of all, she collects the next day's supply of water. In this slum, water only flows during a two-hour window, just once a day.
I felt that you can't come to India without experiencing what we've all heard about the poverty. But I also wanted to frame that story in such a way that it represented the truth of the people. Anchal,
yeah.
I think this is so wonderful that you're giving me the tour guide. You speak English so well. So it wasn't just people living in slums, eating out of the trash piles and not having a place to defecate and all the comes with being extremely, extremely poor. But for me, every story is about the heart of the people. And so what is the heart of the people? How do you find a story that shows somebody who is living a life of sparseness, of poverty, but also still has the heart? Thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Great. All right, we're going here?
Yeah.
All right, thank you. Namaste.
Namaste.
Showers of blessings. Oh, thank you.
Namaste.
Thank you, family. Thank you. I have to tell you, when I stepped in the door, I was thinking, okay, where is the house? Okay, where's the rest of the house? And then I realized I was already in it.
All right, everybody quiet, please.
Okay, I wanted to start off by just saying thank you for allowing me into your home. How long have you lived in this home?
Living for 33 years.
33 years?
Yeah.
You don't look 33 years old. But you've lived here your whole life?
Yeah.
So your family was here before?
Yeah, my family is also here.
In this space?
In this space.
And this is the entire space. The entire family lives and sleeps in this space. One, two, three, four, five of you sleep in this room.
In this room.
You eat in this room. You play in this room. You share family time together in this room, which is from here to here, the five of you.
Yeah.
Okay. This may be an obvious question, and I don't mean to be offensive, but does it ever feel crowded? Does it feel crowded?
No.
It doesn't feel crowded.
No, we just manage it. We have a habit of sleeping because we don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything?
Yeah.
And how do you do it? I mean, how do you physically do it?
I sleep in that corner.
Where I am right now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she sleeps over here, my mother over here, my another sister over here, and my father over here.
Okay. All right. Would you say this is... is this a hard life? Is it difficult?
Yes, ma'am.
It is.
Yeah.
And tell me what's the most difficult thing about it.
Difficult work, then I find that mother work aayegi, maja family illa he karega.
Means he has a problem at that he he cannot manage his salary enough for people.
For four people. Yeah. This was an arranged marriage, right?
Yeah.
It was an arranged marriage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did it turn into a love marriage?
After 1 year, I love it.
After 1 year, you love it. Is he a good partner?
Yeah, very good partner.
Good partner.
Yeah.
Do you have a good life with him?
Yeah, very nice life.
Okay, that family, the man supports his family, and he heard his wife is happy, the kids are happy, clean and everything, and it's generational wealth because they got that 100 square foot spot passed down from his family to the current family that he has. Now, let's cross, we're going to take the same amount of space here, 100 square feet. Now we're going to travel to the UK. We're going to travel to England. And same 100 square feet, just different location.
I recently renovated this 100 square foot building into a cozy tiny home. And in this video, I'll show you around and break down the cost along the way. So let's get started. You enter the property from the side because the building is located in my garden, detached from the main house here in the east of England. I've lived in the house for 4 years, but it's currently undergoing some major renovations, so the tiny house gives me somewhere to live in the meantime. When the house is finished, I'll be renting it out, so this tiny space will serve as storage for my stuff, as I'll be moving away for a while. The extra tall fence can make the space feel darker, but will provide privacy to the tenants if ever I need to come and collect something. Now, you enter the tiny home via this lobby, which feels surprisingly spacious thanks to the wall-to-wall floor mat. When paired with these wall-hung shoe storage boxes, it really helps to maximize the space, and if they are any deeper, I'll be walking into them all the time. With the coat and key racks finishing off the space, and the total cost of everything in this room, from the floor mat, the shoe storage, and the coat rack, was just £121. Not a bad start for this budget build, which I gave myself around £8,500 for. Now, as we take the long walk into the bathroom, it's worth mentioning that there was no running water in this building at all when the renovation started, so that was a significant extra cost.
Now, of course, this is a small bathroom, but the shower feels incredibly spacious, and this wall was actually moved back in order to achieve this.
Which allows for a much more relaxing shower for someone as tall as me, and much more legroom when using the loo. The cost of this room was just over £1,100 in materials and £4,000 in labour, for a total of £5,124, which is where the majority of the budget for this entire renovation went. But you may have noticed there's no sink, which means washing your hands in the kitchen. A small space calls for a small kitchen, and that's exactly what I have done here. But despite that, there's still plenty of room to store, prep, and cook food at home. There's no oven in here, but I rarely use one anyway, and this 4-burner cooktop is more than enough to cook all of my meals, and the microwave is great for reheating any leftovers. The angled extractor fan is compact, which allows me to see what I'm cooking, whilst a smaller fridge allows room on top and down the side to store more things. Now, I think upgrading this toaster to an air fryer would be a huge upgrade for this kitchen, but I want to know what you think, so let me know in the comments below what you think would be the biggest upgrade to this kitchen. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention that these two walls are magnetic whiteboards, which I use all the time to make notes, plan my days, and make lists of things I need to do. To heat the space, I use this electric radiator, because I didn't want to run any gas lines into the property, as that would have massively increased cost. As for keeping it cool, I just have to open the window and the door, and the place will cool down within minutes. The cost of this kitchen is a little more complicated, because I had the worked up and splashback already from a different project. I also got a few things from Facebook Marketplace to help keep the cost down, such as the cooktop, extractor fan, and even the tap. In total though, it cost me just under £1,300, and if you added a little bit more for the bits I got for free, you could look to spend around £1,700 in order to achieve a similar look. Finishing off the kitchen, I have this floor-to-ceiling cupboard, which stores the majority of my possessions. Paring down from a 3-bed house to a 7-shelf cupboard did take some time, but it was something I was going to need to do anyway before the end of the year when I move away. And now we get to where I spend most of my days, the office. I wanted this area to feel more luxurious and professional, as I knew I'd be spending the majority of my time here as a software engineer during the day and a wannabe YouTuber at night. So that's why I chose to make the desk out of a piece of solid oak from an old dining table which I found on Facebook Marketplace, which, when combined with the sit-stand desk frame, gives a lot of flexibility when working. The dual monitors are mounted to this stand, which looks much cleaner than just keeping them both on the desk, and more importantly, it provides a lot more space for everything else. This space will be getting even cleaner soon too, as this PC has just been replaced by my new personal laptop, which is a significant upgrade over my 12-year-old PC. And the reason I could afford this upgrade is because of you. By watching my previous video and subscribing, I managed to unlock monetization. And with that first video pay slip, I upgraded my setup in order to make better videos. So if you have enjoyed this video so far, please consider subscribing, pressing the bell icon, and why not like the video while you're down there too. It's really helping the channel a lot in these early days. Thank you. As for the cost of everything in this office, I spent just £301. Now, I know what a lot of you are thinking. Why did I use such a dark color in this tiny space? And look, I get it. This was the first space I ever designed myself from start to finish. And I learned a lot about interior design along the way. However, even after living in here for 6 months, I still absolutely love this blue. It may not be for everybody, but for me, it works. And it's never made the space feel claustrophobic at all. If I'm not out and about, this is where I spend most of my evenings. And whilst I don't use the sofa in this mode too much, when it's set up as a recliner, it becomes a perfect hangout space for relaxing, playing games, and watching TV. Speaking of, I have this 49-inch LG TV mounted to the wall, which may seem like it's at a terrible viewing angle, but it is actually on this extendable mount, so the entire TV pulls out and rotates 90 degrees so that you can see it while sitting on the sofa. In fact, you can rotate this TV any way you like, so you can watch TV whilst cooking, washing up, or even on the toilet. The wall-mounted PS4 behind the TV ensured that minimal space was used, whilst allowing me to be always just a click of a button away from jumping into some games. To transform this space into a bedroom, I simply have to pull out the sofa, set up the legs, and lay the back on the floor. This gives me about a small double bed in total. I fit. Right? So how much did this all cost? Well, I came into this with a budget of £8,500, and looking back at the kitchen, bathroom, and everything else we've seen so far, they all came to a total of just under £6,700. And when you add in the near £1,200 for the living room section, the total so far comes to £7,870. And that leaves just the miscellaneous section, which includes things like the fencing, electrics, and anything else that didn't naturally fit into any of the other categories. And in total, that came to just under £2,400, leading to a grand total of £10,241. I'll admit it's a little bit over budget, but by doing the work myself, I helped keep that cost from getting even more out of control. So that leaves one more question. Was it worth it? Well, I've actually lived here now for 6 months, and I'm really enjoying being in this space. But besides being just somewhere for me to live whilst the house gets renovated, I actually had the whole house valuated before and after I did this renovation, and the number surprised me. For what cost me £10,000 to renovate, it added £30,000 of value to the house, which was far more than I ever expected. I thought maybe I'd get the money that I invested into it back, but to see that it tripled my investment blew my mind. There are some links in the description below to a lot of the products you've seen throughout this video. And if you want to actually see me transform this space from start to finish, then click right here, or here, to see that video. Because not everything went to plan. And with that, please consider liking the video, subscribing to the channel if you're new around here, and I will see you next time.
Okay, so that audio, and we have that audio. If you want to see the visual of it, it's on our Facebook page, which is BIY Shacks, BIY Shacks, Build It Yourself Shacks. On Facebook, we posted that one as well as the Oprah interview. But The things I want you to look at here is, and today's podcast is settled, $6.85 per day. So the family in India, which survives off a $200 a month paycheck, all right, you see along with Oprah, because now 100 square feet, let's look at it. You have the family members in that video, which you can see on our Facebook page. Those family members, along with Oprah, and she's got a camera crew of at least one person in it. So we're talking about, what, 4, 5, 6, 7 people in 100 square feet for that interview. All right. Take away Oprah and the camera crew, but that's how they live. And they're, you know, the wife's happiness meter. Now, the dad, as the oldest daughter said, sometimes he's worried if his salary won't stretch out, but some kind of way it does, because the common denominators I'm looking at is, number one, happy wife, happy kids, everybody's healthy, everybody's got clean clothes, and they're eating 3 meals a day. All right. What I've learned from people in those neck of the woods, they do not waste. And it's going from generation to generation. Now, we go to the UK, and the guy takes something in his backyard in a shed, 100 square feet, and he turns it into something. Yeah, I mean, he's got a big flat screen TV up in the place, you know, 100 square feet, and he's debt free. When you convert his into pounds, he might, on a high end, probably spend $12,000 American. You know, the British pound is a more valued currency. But once again, 100 square feet. Now, the next audio I'm going to, I don't have this posted on the Facebook page as yet, is the tiny house family, and it's 4 of them. Let's listen to this story.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their two young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their one-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500-square-foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey,
really good.
Thank you. Hey there. Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
There's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So, what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit for Yahoo Finance. I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
All right, there we have it. Okay, we've gone to India, we've gone to the UK, and of course that one is right here in the United States. Now the last, and I just posted that video of the audio you just played. I just posted that so you can see the visual, what they look like, and then, you know, they did that on Anderson Cooper's show, so you'll see that. That's all in the video part of it and whatnot. But they were living in a 1,500-square-foot house. And here's the thing. Okay, physics 101. We can only occupy one space at a time. You know, let me bring some reality to this. Okay. When Aretha Franklin, and she had an $80 million net worth when she transitioned, when she passed away. And she had a very elaborate funeral, homegoing, appropriate for the Queen of Soul. They changed her wardrobe twice, you know, when the viewing part, the wake part or whatever. She went through a change of clothes dead, okay? When they carried her off to the graveyard and they put her in the crypt, it's just a little small space. That's it. She couldn't carry none of that $80 million net worth onto her in the next phase of existence, whatever that might be. So no matter what size house that you're in, and Oprah was in that first audio, and like I said, I got all the videos posted on our Facebook page, BIY Shacks. Oprah, her cameraman, and a family of four or five, they all were in a 100-square-foot home. All right. No bells and whistles to it, but it's home. And you have over $1 billion or $2 billion, but what, once again, let's go, because $200 a month. That's why I like to equate things to the chessboard. We need to look at the chessboard of living globally and then see where you might want to fit in. All right, now, so $200 a month, he's living in Mumbai, India, with his family, and he's got all the basics covered. They got a roof over their head. They're protected from the elements. For people who are married, he's got a happy wife, happy life. He worries sometimes whether it works out with the $200 a month. So that's basically he and his family are living off of $2,400 a year. There's over $685. He lives off about 550 cents a year. Per month, but his family. Okay, his family is earning. 47% of the planet takes in. $2,500.25 per year. That's $6.85 a day. All right. And then, like I say, you take the guy from England and the guy from England. Oh, and the American family. Now they got their big house now, but after they left a 1,500 square foot house, and here's what the thought I was missing. Most people only live in two rooms. Now you might have in the case of this family, the tiny house family, they lived in a 1,500 square foot house. That's going to give you about, let's see, I'm counting from where I'm at. 1, 2, 3. About 10 rooms at least. 4 people, 10. They probably only lived in 3 of those rooms. And we're talking about a family of 4. So they lost the 1,500 square foot house. And they moved to a different location because wealth, from my observation, a big determining factor of wealth is, in my opinion, matter of fact, in our opinion, just the way it is geography. So they moved from the city on a 1,500 square foot house, and they bought 3 acres of land. That's 3 football fields. Then, with money out of the pocket, they were able to build for $12,000 or $13,000 a 168 square foot tiny house, big enough and comfortable enough for 4 people. Man, wife, listen to the wives. I'm gonna play it back again before I go to the phone lines. Kids had plenty of room to play, all right. And the wife, I'm about to play it again. It's a short audio. The wife was able to take her whole paycheck of $3,000 a month and bank it.
Imagine living in a space that measures a mere 168 square feet, more than 14 times smaller than the average American home. Well, it is here inside this tiny house where the proud owners are discovering that less is so much more.
Well, in the past year, we've managed to save everything that I earn. We use my husband's income for our living expenses, and I've been teaching public school, so that's about $3,000 a month that we've put in the bank this year.
Hari, her husband Carl, and their 2 young kids, Archer and Ella, recently celebrated their 1-year anniversary in their tiny house. After losing their 1,500 square foot home to financial struggles, the couple took matters into their own hands, literally. They built this space themselves with just $13,000 in materials. Their goal? To become debt-free and save enough to one day build a new home, mortgage-free. And so far, they're right on track.
Things are going really well with the next project. We're going to build a 16 by 24 unit to begin with, and then we'll branch off of that and add bedrooms.
You may remember seeing this family on The Anderson Show earlier this year, where I joined them on stage. Fascinated by their story, our financially fit team flew down to Virginia to see for ourselves and learn ways we can all downsize.
How are you?
Hey,
really good.
To see you. Hey there.
Living in the tiny house has taught me that we don't need much at all to be happy, and that getting the things that we need can actually be a lot of fun.
Can you get me a bowl and some scissors?
The family's fruit and vegetable garden lets them eat healthier, cut down on their carbon footprint, and slash their grocery bill by as much as 30%. Hari has also been upcycling, as she calls it, taking something old and breathing new life into it.
My favorite upcycling project was the rugs I made for the house. I took old sheets, flat sheets, and crocheted them into rugs. They're beautiful, and they fit the house a lot nicer than if we had gone and bought something new from the store.
The couple also recently switched jobs, not for more money, but more happiness. Carl is enjoying better working conditions at a new restaurant, and Hari left teaching to pursue a career in nonprofit. Being able to afford a career that you love and pursuing a passion rather than a paycheck, they've learned, is just an added benefit to having savings and no debt.
I'm probably taking a 25 to 30% cut in my salary, which is going to enable me to have more time to actually build the house and save money because I'll be the contractor.
It's really a great feeling to be able to make a decision like that, not based on money, but based on what we want to be doing with our time.
The kids also seem keen to the transition. Mom and Dad are happy to report fewer requests for video games or toys now that Ella and Archer are busy playing outdoors on their 3-acre property.
We play down by the creek and up at the big tree up there where the swing is. We play with our neighbors and ride bikes.
There's a lot of different things they can do with their time besides play with plastic toys and get online.
They've really just embraced it wholeheartedly. You can't stop them from having a good time outside.
Still another lesson, when you downsize, it helps to have a support system.
There's such a wealth of knowledge in our community, and that helps us a lot. And having that support makes it like we're doing it together. Moving to the country has given us a lot of things, not just the tiny house.
So what do you think? What are your thoughts about living in a tiny house? Would you ever do it? Connect with me on Twitter at Farnoosh and use the hashtag FinFit for Yahoo Finance. I'm Farnoosh Tarabi.
Okay, there you have it. That's part of the landscape. So once again, 84% of the planet lives on $30 a day or less. That totals up to $10,850 per year. Now, we're looking at things globally, all right? And some people that might be listening in Chicago, Seattle, Miami, San Diego, Boston, Massachusetts, whatever, I can't live off that. Well, one of the clues that they had was they moved from the city to a country rural environment, and they bought land by the acre. You buy land by the acre, your cost of living dramatically goes down. And they cut out the fat. Tiny houses are about, they cut out 70% of the house that most people don't use. It was four of them, all right? And then even Oprah, with all those billions, she fit in her, I mean, we really don't take that much space up as human beings. But anyway, food for thought. If you're and most of you probably, well, at least in Western countries, you're living on more than $30 a day. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. 309 area code. Your mic is open.
Good morning, LA.
Good morning.
You know, I like hearing the encouraging words of people that are actually doing it. You know, and the biggest one of what was being said there is she gets to bank her $3,000 a month in income. You know?
Yeah, well, I've been jumping for joy too. I mean, bank the whole paycheck and the roof over their head and the family's just, all expenses are covered.
Right. And now, where I told everybody that it would cost you anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 to build a 100 square foot tiny home. We just watched the thing, and right there's 100 square foot. Got your kitchen, got your bathroom, got a place to sleep, place to sit, watch television, and it's not ugly.
Right.
That was the other thing. And it added $30,000 value to his property. Now, he thought he would just get his money back, maybe. But by him doing the work, he put the sweat equity in. He didn't pay it out to someone else. That's where your seven frames come in. And
right.
You don't spend the money. You just spend the time. But you're also spending quality time with people and letting them know that they matter and what they're going through and what they're going to be going through is going to be different.
Right. And
right?
That, yeah, and the one that you're talking about, yeah, the guy in the UK, yeah, that's a nice little chic place he made. I mean, with that big flat screen TV and other stuff, that's a nice home that he built.
Exactly. And he done it, for £10,000. And it added $30,000 equity to his house. Those are
exactly
key ingredient things to pay attention to, that he not only added that equity, what if he rented that and now he got an income? So he'll earn $30,000 with that thing over the next
well,
three
it,
or
really?
Four
well,
months.
Just like we've had, I think you heard him on the show, Ansel, the guy out of Oakland. I mean, in his backyard, he's got two tiny houses that he rents out. And he makes about $10,000 plus a month off of the two tiny houses in his backyard. So you're absolutely right. That guy could easily rent that space out. And he can use that. I mean, it'll be discretionary income to pay off the house, the bigger house, if it's not paid off already. Or do whatever he wants to do with it. So, so that's why I put those videos out there.
No, I definitely like the videos.
Right, right.
I think people
need to see, particularly the tiny house family. Now they're in 168 square feet, and a lot of people, if you look at the video, I think they do an outline, the footprint of how big that is. It might not be as big as a lot of parking spaces. But, if you look on the inside, they had plenty of space, living area for, the whole family of four. And the kids were small but not toddlers. And I imagine by now he's built, because that audio was about 4 or 5 years old, so he's probably built the bigger structure by now. But I've noticed people that do that, they'll build a cabin or a small structure first and live in that while, they do the large one. So it's basically up to people's lifestyle, imagination, and priority. But the thing is, with the tiny house family, they're building debt-free. They're building debt-free. So, it would be nice to put $3,000 clear in your bank account every month. But that's how they were able to do it. Chris, anything you want to announce on your end?
Well, when I made that offer of a 2,500 square foot, 96 square foot, or $2,500 for a 96 square foot situation, that gets people started, whether you can afford it all or not. Do it as these other people do and buy it as you can. And
right.
And one thing about the frame is it can stand there and not worry about water messing with it. So as long as it takes you to do it, it can still be. But as you get these things, these are ways to just move forward. That's why I was saying, the number that I said came in to giving you the roof and the siding along with it. So these are little things that I thought might make a difference toward, people actually stepping forward and doing something, because they can also look online and find all of the components. Maybe they're used, someone doesn't, or redesigned what they were doing and couldn't return something. Sometimes when they buy things, they can't return them. and you're stuck
that's
with
true.
Them. So, but that's the. Oh, that was the thought I had behind
that's
that.
True. Okay. All right. Let's see. All right. Well, those. Well, that's what we're following. Like I say, these global guidelines. Like I say, you have over a billion, probably nearly almost 2 billion people on the planet that live off $1.25 per day. That's less than $500 a year. Nearly half of this planet lives off of $6.85 or less per day. That's 47% of the people on planet Earth. That which year in a year there's 2,525 cents, and then of course 84% of the planet lives on $30 a day or less, and that comes to $10,850. So, and you know what'll be interesting. Is a lot, because you have quite a few immigrants in the country now that are coming from developing countries, and they don't waste like we Americans do. They don't waste like we do, and they're going to be I believe we're going to see some new immigrant millionaires come in. Now, they're not starting off as millions. It's just they really know what they really like. Well, like we were talking about the other day with the Patel cartels and whatnot. They'll get a motel, which is a family-based business, the way they operate them. And, you know, they'll have, the family lives where they work. They might take a unit or two, and you know that's you know, mom, dad, grandparents, in-laws, kids, toddlers, they live there too. So, matter of fact, Chris, explain a little bit more about that, because I was interested in what you brought up the other day about the Patels. If Chris is here, okay. Let me see what I can find on the Patel cartel. And they call a lot of their motels, hotels. Let's see, Patel. Oh, here we go. And for some people that say, man, I can't live off of $30 a day, or I can't live off of $1.25 a day or whatever, I say that's a skill set. It's a skill set. If you're taught how to live without wasting, I know when I lived over in Europe I was living in Europe for like half the year for about 5 consecutive years. And when you're living in a place, you take on how they live. I'll try to explain it one day. But, like, for instance, this is real simple. It's like grocery shopping, instead of most people getting their car and drive to the store, grocery shopping when I was over in Europe, particularly Germany, we had access to a car. But we would, even in the wintertime when it was cold, you either walk to the store. I mean, that's what you just did. You walk. They call it sport. Either walk or ride a bike. Take your pick. And the only time we used that car was really a van, was going across town or going out of the country. But going to get groceries and everything was small there, like, you know, there's no American-sized refrigerators, so you can only put so much in the refrigerators. But some people go shopping and eat fresh daily or every other day. Daily or every other day, because the refrigerator is just on. Nobody had a freezer, because some people, like over here, you know, they have a refrigerator, plus they'll have a deep freezer where they can store more food. But, you know, a lot depends on culture. So that, how water was used, dual flush toilets, like a dual flush toilet, it had two buttons on it. The small buttons would be for liquid waste, and the bigger button flush would be for solid waste. They had, what else did I use? Tankless hot water to save on electricity or energy. Passive solar windows to heat up the home or heat up the whole place. Matter of fact, there's one more audio that I wanted to play for you guys. Because this is where the ball is going to. And we're incorporating this in what we do. Let me see. Guess I got to wait for my board to, okay. Okay, listen to this one, because this is where the ball is going also.
In 1986, when the Chernobyl disaster sent radioactive clouds all over Europe, we knew we had to do something against nuclear energy. Many parents were really concerned about their children, and so some of us formed a group named Parents for a Nuclear-Free Future. We began to educate ourselves in how to save energy. We started in our own home, and then we tried to motivate others to do the same. We wanted the energy company to support us, but they told us no, because we want to sell energy and not to save energy. And so one day we had the idea to take over the grid.
Citizens could generate their own power from solar, hydro, and wind.
Small producers are paid when they feed their electricity into the grid. Consumers are rewarded when they save energy.
Die Stromversorger haben uns zunächst überhaupt nicht.
So then there was only one question. How do we get the power grid? When the election came up to decide who controls the grid, we knew it was now or never.
EWS, the Shunau Electrical Power Company, held two citizen referendums and won them both.
The power company said, well, you have the votes, but we have the grid. And we want 9 million Dutch mark, and either you pay it or we don't give you the grid. So we had a campaign asking people to help us raising this money.
It took EWS 7 long years to purchase the electrical grid.
This power company was afraid that this was the beginning of a movement, and it was.
Under Ursula's plan, homeowners have small power plants called cogenerators. EWS is now collectively owned by more than 1,000 citizens.
A year after we had taken the grid, the German electricity market was deregulated. Every person could buy electricity from the company he had chosen. And that is the idea of renewable power, because it's decentralized.
This is grassroots at its best. More than 100,000 people now have the electric current from this very small city, and they are very proud of it.
We want to have 100% renewable energy in 2050. All studies say it is possible to do that, and so we will do it.
For outstanding environmental achievement in Europe, the 2011 Goldman Environmental Prize is awarded to Ursula Sladek, Schunau, Germany.
All right, and that's where the ball is going to. You have small little villages somewhere in the future, even neighborhoods that, you know, they're firing the monopolized utility companies and doing it that way. I mean, where I'm at right now, I have my own private water system, so most of my neighbors with wells. So your house, every basic house has a basic structure where they can, if it's set up correctly, the house can generate its own own power, which includes electricity. So those communities are slowly sprouting up around the globe. And that's just an example of one of them. Let's see. Chris, are you back yet? Okay, he might be occupied doing something. All right. Well, for you guys out there that are earning more than $30 a day or earning more than $6.85 per day, definitely earning more than $1.25 a day, you're in a special position to catapult yourself to, some really interesting levels of prosperity. But like I say, a lot of people that, particularly, you know, the run-of-the-mill person, if you ask them, can you live off of $10,000 a year? If they're in, say, like Boston, Seattle, Los Angeles, Dallas, Houston, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, those places, you're going to get more than half the people that say, I can't live off of that. Particularly the ones that are talking about, more equal pay or the cost of living raise has to go up or whatever it might be. No, what, in my opinion, is essentially you have to learn the skills to optimize the most of what you already have. So you got, like I said, you've got 84% of the planet that lives off of $30 a day or less. So it can be done. If it's done by over, nearly half the planet lives off of $6.85 per day or less. That's less than $3,000 for an entire year. That's why I played that Oprah video. He does it for about $5.50 a day. What does he know to remain debt-free versus a person that has a 30-year mortgage? That, matter of fact, we'll save that for tomorrow. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.